The Law of the Lord. We're going to study this subject for 2 weeks, taking various commandments of the Decalogue and seeing their relationship to God, their purpose, and their relevance to us. But as we begin such a subject, I like to begin it with the realization that God is love. We've already seen that He is supreme, that He is the Creator and Maker and Sustainer, that He is our Father, but He is love. And love I like to define as the principle that makes and maintains ideal relationships. Every kind of relationship. If I relate myself to my environment, I don't destroy the trees. I don't shoot every bird. I don't destroy every insect, every animal that comes my way. I love it. I maintain a right relationship. And then, if we don't cut down the trees, if we let the ecology develop as God intended, then the weather, then the climatic conditions, then the environmental conditions, all will be maintained. So love is the principle that makes and maintains ideal relationships. Those relationships are described by law. The Ten Commandments describe 10 relationships that love has devised and would maintain. Now, when God created His universe, He made certain beings possessed of moral qualities. They could choose to follow, they could fail to choose to follow. And so He entered into a relationship with them that should they keep His law and continue loving, they would live forever. But since law describes perfect relationships, once those relationships are fractured, once the law is broken, then the whole scheme is broken, disintegrated, and the end is destruction. So the wages of sin is death. So the old covenant that God made with sinless beings that is still in existence with the unfallen angels was this: obey and live, disobey and die. But Adam and Eve sinned. They disobeyed. Death passed upon all flesh. Then it was that the new covenant was inaugurated. Jesus Christ took the place of man, died in his stead in the purpose of God, and gave mankind a second chance. When man sinned, he lost his built-in ability to obey. Through the provisions of the new covenant, he gets grace. Now he has a graced inability to obey. So the new covenant is, I will help you to obey and keep you from disobeying lest you die. So we are thinking about love, law, and covenant as we enter our study for the next 2 weeks. Let us never separate them. Part number one, the Creator and law. The throne of God, that's where the king sits, this is where he legislates, is eternal. It goes from age to age, forever and ever. The scepter, the symbol of his government, of thy kingdom, is a right or righteous scepter. Throne, God, the judge. He is the maker. He understands the machinery that he has made. He knows the food and the oil and the various methods of maintaining. He understands every relationship of every part. And he has defined those relationships in his law and in his judgment. The works of thy hands are judgment. That is, they are maintained through just decisions. Thy commandments, the law that thou dost make, are sure. They stand forever. They are done in uprightness. Now, if they are broken, then relationships are fractured. Now let's go back to Romans 1 and think about this philosophically. I think of my automobile. It's made to run on gas. I could say, well, I like Welch's grape juice better. Let's try Welch's grape juice. What an absurd thing to do. The maker has designed it to run on gas. But you say, I like the smell of Welch's grape juice better. I like its color better. I like its feel better. Doesn't matter what you like. It's the same sort of reason we make into our diet. God has made us not to eat some things and to eat other things. We say, well, I like the taste, I like the smell. And we put into the machinery that which brings about its final destruction. So we get to know the truth of God from a study of the knowable things. The knowable things. I don't soak my camera in water. I don't. I will destroy it. It's not made to be soaked in water unless I get an undersea camera. Then it's made to survive that kind of environment. So as I weigh up life around me, I discover that in order to survive, I must follow certain principles to maintain certain relationships. And then I lift this up into the things of heaven, and I realize that I must keep God's law in order to survive in God's kingdom. Part number two, man and God's law. God's law is perfect. It's certain. It's right. It's pure. It's ready to change my thinking, converting. It's ready to give me wisdom so I can apply my knowledge to the solution of problems. It is ready to bring up emotional well-being. It will rejoice my heart. And it will educate me. It will give me insights. It will enlighten my eye. This is the law, the Torah, the total teaching of God that He is ready to give to me. Now, what am I going to do about it? I can ignore it. I can fight it. I can be antinomian. I can say, well, I am the measure of my man. I can do what I want to do. It's my life that I've got to live. And we can break all God's regulations and then face the consequence. But what has God required? That I might respect Him, love Him, fear Him. That I should walk in all His ways. There's nothing He's told me that's not necessary, that's not beneficial. That I might love Him, that is, show myself appreciative. That I might serve Him, show myself subservient to Him, with all my heart and soul and strength. And if I am ready to do this, then He will do for me more than I can do, or even think I can do. Part number three, the primacy of God. I am before all things. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Now, when you think of God, think of the dynamic of action. Think of the idol that we've already talked about. In the center of our personality, we must put God. Everything we do, everything we plan, everything we hope for, everything we devise, everything we relate to, should have God at its center. I don't take any job, I don't do any work without God at its center. I was talking to somebody not so long ago who wanted to go to Saudi Arabia. And I said to him, now, will you be able to keep the Sabbath in Saudi Arabia? He said, well, I guess not. No, they don't give you the Sabbath. Then I said, what are you going to do? Well, he says, I told the Lord that for 2 years I would break the Sabbath and then I would come back home and I would keep the Sabbath anymore. But he says, I haven't been able to go to Saudi Arabia. I said, well, I'm glad. God has kept you from breaking the Sabbath. You can't play with His law. You can't make conditions and say, Lord, I am going to break the Sabbath for 2 years and still I'm going to be your child. God must be supreme. He is not somebody we can brush aside. He is somebody who must be supreme in our hearts and in our lives. We must worship Him only. We must serve Him only and carry out His will. Part number four, reverence for God. What is the meaning of reverence? To revere. That is to respect. To respect. I have a respect for wood. I enjoy working with wood. I can buy some good, valuable wood and I can stack it on the ground. It gets damp, it gets termites, gets destroyed. I can leave it out in the rain. It'll crack and shake. I can put it higgledy-piggledy one on top of the other and it'll warp. But if I sticker it and I cover it and I treat it with respect, it will do wonderful things for me. And so what this term reverence indicates is that I must subordinate my own arrogant will and ideas and respect the presence and the purpose and the will of God. I must not take the name of God in vain. I must not claim to be a Christian and give a lie to my profession. Part number 5 deals with the Sabbath. I must first of all remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. This means that it existed before. This means that I must remember it for the 6 working days, when I do 6 days of labor, and my work is regulated and carried through with respect to the Sabbath that lies ahead. It's a sign of the revered Father. I have mentioned the etymology that Cox, Robert Cox, who has written the literature of the Sabbath question and Septenary Institutions and other books, he suggests that the possible etymology of Sabbath is two words, sab and bath. The ath part of it, or the oath part of it, means a sign, and the b in front of it means at the sign off, and you get it in Elizabeth, Bethphage, Bethlehem, or Sabbath, at the sign off. The ab is father, and the s in front of it, he suggests, is an abbreviation for manly or revered or gentlemanly or respected. And he suggests that Sahib comes from the same sort of background. And so Cox's suggestion is that Sabbath is etymologically the sign of the revered Father. So we remember that every day as we move towards the seventh day of the week. The Sabbath commandment is twofold. We must work. The man who doesn't work doesn't eat. And on the seventh day, he rests and observes the Sabbath day. Part number 6. How does he do it? He turns away his foot from the Sabbath. Now, if you'll take your concordance someday and do a little word study on foot, you'll discover that foot is a Bible sign language for possession. Abraham didn't have land enough to put his foot on. You put your foot on your enemy's neck. When you possess, you can walk. Your feet shall stand that day in Zion. A foot is a sign of possession. So when we take our foot from the Sabbath, we don't claim any portion of that sacred day as our own. It's the Lord's day, and not man's day. Now, what do we do on the Lord's day? Let me give an illustration. What would you think of a son who came to his father on Mother's Day and said to him, "Mother, we're going to celebrate Mother's Day." Now, his mother was an 82-year-old gentle lady. And the son says to his mother, "We're going to the drag races today." And she shudders. She sits on the front row, and those noisy cars go shrieking past her, and she shudders every moment. But her son is enjoying it. And then after the drag race is over, he says, "Mother, we're going to Shakey's, and we're going to have a root beer and pizza." And she thinks of all the Tums that she will have to take afterwards, because at her 80 years of life, Shakey's pizza is not her idea of a nice meal. She would much rather have something with less potency and gentleness to her system. But they go, she goes along, and at the end of the day, the son says to her, "Mother, I hope you've had an enjoyable Mother's Day." Well, that wasn't a Mother's Day. Everything that the son suggested, the son was pleased to do. The mother would probably have liked the old albums of the pictures of her children brought out. And she should have reminisced and remembered and had her grandchildren round her. And I think sometimes we keep the Sabbath like that son kept Mother's Day. We do on that day the things that please us, and we give God very little thought. We ought to remember that the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord and keep it as the Lord wishes.